Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this podcast, I spoke to Becky, a parent of two biological and one adoptive children. Becky shares their story of an unsuccessful adoption assessment that led to her and her husband having to repeat the process with a voluntary adoption agency. They were approved, and halfway through the introductions, the country went into the first lockdown. So this is an honest conversation, and Becky describes some difficult experiences that they faced as a family on their adoption journey. Becky is also a social worker and shares her perspective on social work practice from that experience. We hope you find it interesting, and as always, if you've experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook page or you can email us at andfpodcast@gmail.com.
I'm Becky. I've got three kids, two of them birth children, one of them adopted. I work part-time, I'm married. That's about it, really.
So can you tell us, or tell me, how you came to adopt?
So we'd had our birth children and had a difficult time with that whole process, really. One of my birth children was diagnosed with a neurodevelopmental disorder in utero. So that was quite traumatic. And I did not want to put my body or my mind through that process again. My husband was quite keen on biological children, but we decided to kind of have a bit of an investigate into what our options were. And when we did that, we kind of made an informed choice really between us. Both of us were on board with the fact that adoption was really the better option for us as a family and as a couple, as parents and people in our own right, from loads of different angles really. We'd thought about adoption when we were trying for the boys, and then got pregnant, so we'd kind of shelved it and then got it off the shelf a couple of years after. So yeah, I'm a social worker with adults, have been for quite a while now, and I've never ever wanted to work with children. So when I qualified, I went straight into working with adults, and I have done ever since. But obviously, when I was doing my degree, I did it with some fantastic people who then went on to work with children. And one in particular has helped me massively through this whole process. I didn't understand the legal side of it. I didn't understand the process of it, all the assessments, you know, the stages, any of that. So although I think my social work background, and I'll probably go into a bit later in our story, helped me to have a perspective on what kind of questions we were asked, what kind of risks they were trying to kind of get at, and why, you know, in the stages they were being quite so. I know a lot of us find it quite invasive, it is, isn't it? But why they were doing that. I understood the why behind it, I suppose, a bit better, but not the how. I didn't get any of that.
I mean, how did you find the preparation process and the assessment overall, you know, as a whole family? Because obviously you had two children who went through the process.
So we've been through the process twice effectively, once with a local authority and once with a charity. So with the local authority, when we first kind of decided to go for it, we found out about the 2-year age gap kind of rule that most places have. And you know, that was quite hard because that wasn't really out there, that piece of information. I didn't really seem to come across it before I phoned and felt like an idiot for phoning, you know. This one local authority was like, oh, come back in a few years' time. So I think they wanted like a 4-year age gap for one reason or another. But once they understood the research behind that and the kind of needs of your children being met because of that, I found that a lot easier to kind of go with. But yeah, it felt like from the start, because of having birth children that were still young, we were on the back foot from the start, that there was more questions, more kind of discussions about risk and adoptions breaking down and how that can happen more with birth children in place. And so, yeah, so I think that kind of preparation process was a bit jaded from the start. It wasn't exactly the most exciting of times. It was more feeling like, oh dear, okay, well, we haven't, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We do have children. We're not going to apologize for that fact. So yeah, we went into stage one. That was quite lengthy. We had one social worker for stage one, different one for stage two. There's quite a few gaps. Information went missing. I don't think it was anything, you know, abnormal to what a lot of adopters find, really. But yeah, if that kind of answers your question about the preparation of the process, that was what we found the first time round when we were with the local authority. Yeah.
So why did you then sort of move on to a charity and get reassessed by them?
Yeah, so this is when it did go pear-shaped, for want of a better word. So we attended a lot of training run by the local authority because we wanted to consider foster to adopt early permanence as well as traditional adoption. So we went on the extra training. We did a heck of a lot of training really with them. And on the last 3 days of the training, up until this point, I think we'd attended quite a lot of training. On the last 3 days of training, there was a lot about kind of abuse. There was a lot about neglect. There was a lot about, you know, the experiences of your child to date could be this or they could be that. Nothing that we weren't familiar with, you know, professionally, I was very familiar with it. I was also very familiar with the way in which the training was delivered via case studies. You know, you get somebody's story, you get the child's story, and then you kind of, I'm sure lots of people are familiar with this in different kinds of contexts of training, and then you break it down and kind of work out how you feel about it, how the child or the parents might feel about it. My husband's not familiar with that kind of training whatsoever. This is not his area. He was that was really new to him to kind of pass a subjective opinion in a training arena. How he works, it's a lot more objective. It's a lot more, let's fix things, or, you know, it's, you're either right or you're wrong. So he found that really hard. And there was nothing picked up about learning needs. There was nothing picked up about learning styles. And there was nothing about any concerns that they had about how he'd come across in training on day one or day two or day three. There was nothing fed back to us about any of that. And I should also add that my husband, you know, I say I'm familiar with this kind of stuff. My husband's lived this kind of stuff. You know, my husband had a very difficult childhood, which we thought would be something that he could, draw upon. And obviously, you don't want it to be something that you haven't considered and reflected on in your life. But at the same time, there's no tying up loose ends with that kind of an experience. It's still messy. It's still difficult. I don't think in our view, it's real to say, oh, I've closed that door and moved on. I don't know anybody who could do that with the experiences he's had. So anyway, when they brought up stuff about, you know, trauma and abuse, and I think they took it that he came across as kind of quite like, oh yeah, all right, yeah, okay. But that's just because he's in it, he's been there, he's lived it. So none of that came across well, but we had no idea that none of that had come across well until a few weeks later. We were about to go to panel. Our social worker had on three different occasions told us about a baby that was waiting, that was due, that we were on the, our names were down to be their foster to adopt carers. I'd decorated the nursery, the cot, a little woolen bonnet was waiting for a newborn. Everything, you know, the wipes, the cotton wool, the nappies were out. Changing table was ready. And we got a call the day, it was about two or three weeks to panel. We got the day a call, I think it was on the Monday, saying, can you come in for a meeting the next day? Because there's been some concerns in the report they've written about you from the training, which we knew they were going to give. We knew they'd give this report. We were aware that we were being assessed. We were aware that we were being assessed throughout this whole process. What we weren't aware of is that we were being tested. And those two things to me are very, very different. Yeah. So, we went into this meeting having spent the bulk of the evening talking to friends, working out what we could say. We had the concerns, they'd emailed them over so we could prepare, and we thought, right, he obviously needs to do some like reflective kind of discussions and writing about this, these concerns they've raised, and maybe we need to say that we'll pay for some training, more training that we could go on, that kind of thing. So we had it all down. We went in the room. It was our social worker and another manager. I don't know about anybody else, but like, a different manager every time we went to any meeting. There seemed to be lots of different managers going around. So there's another manager who asked who wanted to speak first. And we said, well, we thought, right, this is our opportunity to kind of show that we've really taken this seriously and we're going to. So I started being the kind of social worky type. I was like, right, what we'd like to say is that we're sorry this is how it's come across and this is what we've read. I think she said, I've got to stop you there. This goes no further. And I went, what do you mean? You are going no further with us. And I grabbed hold of my husband because it's like that poem, I don't know if you know it, not waving but drowning, because he just kept talking because he thought he could make it better, and he realised we were in a corner and he was trying to explain himself, and whatever he said, it was gone. That was us done. And I can't really remember what else they said or did after that. But all I remember is walking into that room, ready to have a child, and walking out of that room knowing that that child had gone. And I walked out, and the best way I can explain it is that I looked up and I genuinely was surprised to see the sky was in the same place. That sounds ridiculous, but to me it felt incongruous that the world should carry on and that these people are just walking along the street and that the street is still there, because everything had just gone for me in the flash of a few words. Everything had just gone. And to me, and I suppose this is where a trigger warning should come in with this, you know, that I'd lost a baby. You know, to me, walking down that street, that's how it felt. And I don't know what it's like to have that physical loss, but to me, there ensued a period of grief that's like nothing I've ever had in my whole life. And we appealed it and we complained about it and we saw legal advice about it. And the conclusion was that there was no budging. There was no way out. This was us done. After 2 years, this was us done. And my husband and I went, you know, this was a really difficult time for us. He felt he'd done something incredibly wrong. He felt to blame. But we carried on and we spent the next few months just, you know, getting these responses to these complaints that completely missed the point, the purpose that was, as a social worker, what I was trying to say, and as a mother and as a person, was I'm not complaining about your process. I'm complaining about you treating us like human beings in your process. Mm. I'm complaining about the fact that you didn't even consider the context that we were in for 1 second in that room. And to me, I was ashamed of my own profession at that moment in time. But I was just, my breath was utterly taken away from me about that. So we then decided to continue, which I have to give all credit to my husband for even considering continuing at that point. And I don't know if I'm allowed to mention names, but Bernardo's, they were the only people that would take us. They were the only people that would take us. I phoned adoption agencies hither and thither. And they took a chance on us. They saw, we sent them all the report, all the concerns, everything we'd been through. We sent them all the paperwork. We thought, do you know what? We don't want this again. You know, we're going to tell you everything that's happened to us, everything. And they commenced stage one again. And it was like chalk and cheese. It was like night and day. The difference in the process to me was astonishing, that there's a legal process that's mandated that could be done so very differently in two different agencies. So like they came to us, I think it was most weeks, they would come and sit for like maybe 2-3 hours and talk and ask questions and dig down and find out more. We got to know our social worker, who is still our social worker today. She's still our allocated social worker. And without her, we would not have our baby. There is no doubt in my mind about that. So we got through this process that was more intense, but we felt was more authentic. We felt was more transparent, more supportive. They were, and I think this is the inherent issue in my humble opinion, their priority was us, because they weren't holding those vulnerable children, you know, and acting in their best interest, as is absolutely right by the local authority. They weren't juggling those different tensions between a doctor seeking a child and a child seeking a family. In the local authority, we felt like we were collateral in the search for this family for a child. Whereas with Bernardo's, we felt like we were genuine, cared for, prioritized human beings. And the difference also was that they were interested in our current children and our way of parenting them and our dilemmas and issues. And, you know, we already have a child with learning needs, so we'll talk about that. How is that for you? Whereas the local authority told us very clearly that there was no need for them to see us with our current children. And I'm not talking about whether they're birth children or adopted children. I'm just saying having children surely can be in some way discussed. But we were told that there was no need for them to look into that, because parenting an adopted child is so very different that there was nothing they could take from watching my husband be a great big softy with the children he would die for. You know, and because they never saw that, they never got under it. And I also think, and again, this is my humble opinion, and yes, I'm hurt, and yes, I'm probably talking out of anger still. I'll be angry till the day I die about this. But it'd take a lot of therapy. But he is working class, and he's a Tory. And nobody in that training was at all from his perspective on life, you know. And I get it. I've been hanging around social workers for years, mostly middle class, mostly liberal. You know, and also the other guys in the training barely spoke. And because he spoke up and asked and said, I don't get that. What's that about? That I just think there's no diversity in that regard. You know, we all talk about diversity, and absolutely, God, we all need it in all regards. But let's talk about when you come from a culture that is just plain speaking and is just like no nonsense, and you don't share the same political views as everyone else in the room. Does that make you a bad father? Does that make you a bad parent? You know. So anyway, we went with Bernardo's. We got expedited through stage one. Stage two, went on the training. and the training, I just couldn't believe, was just so different. They feed back at the end of every training, how they think you've done, how do you think they've done? What, have you got any more questions? It was an open discussion to be had. It was a learning experience. People don't learn when their back's against a wall and they feel frightened, you know. So that for us was yeah, the kind of process and the stages.
I mean, that's a podcast in of itself. It sounds harrowing, and it sounds like you've, you know, putting my social work head on, my experience of social work has transformed my experience. I hope it's transformed my practice as a social worker.
Me too. Yeah,
which has been really helpful. So tell me about, you know, you're a parent now to an adopted child. Tell me what that's like. You know, how does that compare to the anticipation of being an adoptive parent, and the process of matching? Was that, did you go foster to adopt through Barnardo's, or was it?
No, we didn't in the end. We went traditional in the end because we just felt like our current children, we just couldn't hold that tension for them. You know, and we'd been through so much already, we needed an extra level of certainty than we did when we were kind of new and naive to it. But yeah, I'm not saying that people that do foster adopt are naive. I just feel for us, we needed certainty at this point in our journey. So what was it like? So matching, so just getting through panel, I couldn't breathe until the panel chair came back in and said, you've been approved as adopters, because we had a letter from a local authority saying to us that we were inappropriate to adopt. I have it in black and white still. And to hear that from those people that sat in a room and quite rightly judged us, but judged us judiciously, in the true sense of the word, with a holistic assessment based on everything we had to offer, and triangulated their assessment. I know I'm using like professional terms here, but they have to assess from more than one source of evidence. This is my basic of like understanding what an assessment is. I teach social work students, I teach them they need to triangulate at least with 3 points of evidence. So these people in this room asked us about our whole lives, you know, asked me how I was going to fit exercise in when I adopted. And I was like, oh, I'll just stink all day and go, you know, have a shower in the evening or whatever. But I think, adoption panel was a real ratification of the fact that we were no longer inappropriate. And then when we went on Linkmaker, oh my God, I went a bit mad on Linkmaker. I ended up expressing an interest in over 80 children.
Wow, that's a lot of kids.
Yeah, and we barely got any responses. My friend, who's a single adopter, went through the training with us. She got loads of stuff back. They loved her. But yeah, we've only got any responses, and we had a few kind of discussions about a couple of children. Our social worker was really good at kind of being cautious and listening and informing us to help us make judgments. That was really helpful. And then our child turned up on Linkmaker, and we went to a what are they called? Like activities day? About a year and a half ago now. I met her. We knew she would be there from our discussions we were already having. She came in, honestly, it was hilarious. There you are thinking that your kid's going to come in and be like all glowing and smiling. It's going to be this magic moment in exactly the same way as when I birthed my children. I thought I'd have this instant connection. It'd be this beautiful moment. And all it was just mess and raw and difficult, and I was a bit out of it, you know. So she came in the room, she was howling, she was not impressed, she was crying, she looked rough, she'd obviously been crying for some time. But once she calmed down and we got to chat and talk to her, and you know, her social workers there watching us, the foster carers watching us, but we didn't feel pressured. We just felt like they were there, you know, obviously they're there to make sure that the best thing happens for her. And my husband, more than me really at this point, because I was still being very cautious from what we'd been through, he says, no, this is it, this is right, this is our child. So we went forward from there, had all the further discussions and went to matching panel. That all went really well. And then the week before lockdown, we started introductions the week before the first lockdown.
All right. That's good timing.
Yeah. It was great timing. We were sat there and the manager was like, there's something going on about coronavirus. So just tell us if you feel a bit unwell. Make sure that you like wash your hands or not.
That's it, sorted.
That's where we were at that point as a nation, I think. So halfway through introductions, we all got calls, the foster carers are theirs, from our relevant social workers saying, we're either going to have to move this along a bit, or she has to stay with the foster carers for an unending amount of time. You know, we don't know what's going on, and we don't know when you'll be able to take her home. So at that point, we took her home. We decided to take her home. And I think, you know, all credit to foster carers for that. All credit to them, because that must have been even harder than they had actually planned and expected that to go. And then she came home. And the next 10 weeks of our lives, she came home the same day as my children were sent home from school with no date for return. My current children. And the next 10 weeks was relentless, really. Was the word for it. Yeah.
I mean, because it's lockdown. We've had so many versions of lockdown, but that lockdown was literally don't even leave the garden.
Yeah.
It was intense, wasn't it? And obviously the anxiety, the added anxiety of what the heck's happening in the world and family members, extended family, and all. But the other side of that is, you know, if social workers could wave their magic wands, they'd probably want people to do that anyway, wouldn't they? They'd want that kind of that enforced grafting of families together.
Yes, I think there was a bit of a debate in the adoption community, because I mean, I posted to say, look, I'm finding this really, really tough. I think this was about 3 weeks in. And there was a few comments saying, or just take it as, you know, your bonding time. And of course you wouldn't normally be seeing people anywhere. Yeah, of course we planned that in. We understood the importance of that. But this wasn't being done with any choice to it. And this wasn't being done with any end date. And it was being done in the light of worrying about the people I love. And, you know, when we would get support, you know, from anyone at any point with two other children. And at this point, she regressed enormously. I mean, I should have known. I did go on the training. They did say this would happen. I think I just kind of went, oh, yeah, right. Oh, my God. It got so real with that. I had a newborn and two other children who also regressed because they were frightened and worried and didn't know this other little person that had moved in and didn't really quite, one of them particularly didn't quite like the whole idea at all. So, I think the whole bonding time, I get that, but the context to me, that was not what this was for us anyway, at all. I mean, we did bond and there were some lovely times. But nobody got much sleep, and I don't know, maybe I just had these very self-recriminatory thoughts that I should have been that Pinterest mum and I should have been doing this and I should have been doing homeschooling. And we gave up on homeschooling after 2 weeks when one of my sons, the one with specific learning needs, said to me, "You're not my teacher and this is not my school." And I just thought, I absolutely cannot disagree with you. Let's just stop this charade right now and just go with the flow, which is what we did. But yeah, my mental health definitely deteriorated at that point.
And so were you getting, did the social workers visit or was it all remote?
It was all remote from the social workers. Bernardo sent their family support worker twice, which was just like an oasis in the desert. She was awesome. But that was it. That was the on those two occasions for a couple of hours. And my husband worked throughout. He wasn't furloughed or anything. So there wasn't anything else.
Sounds like a really, well, it clearly was a really intense time, but compounded by everything that happened. So year on, 18 months on, where do you find yourself now?
Where do we find ourselves? Muddling through. You've got to go through it, as it says in Berhan. On a good day, we find ourselves as a family of five who all love each other and mostly get on. My two older children are, you know, back in the swing of things with school, obviously, when it's not some holidays, and doing fine, you know, all things considered. My husband and I are back on pretty much an even keel and even had a date night, which was miraculous. And
well done.
Thank you for that. We went to go to Nando's and not spend a lot of money, but that went, we went to the next door restaurant that was vastly more expensive instead.
to hell with it.
Yeah. And my daughter has multiple professionals involved in her life and has a diagnosis now. And we're seeking educational support for her going forward. And I feel like I'm her part-time care coordinator most of the time. On a bad day, she needs me so much that I just want to go and sit somewhere else and not have my skin clawed at and not have the screaming every time I leave the room. And one of my little boys, you know, I feel like I have traded him in for her some days. You know, that's how he feels some days. And I just wonder whether we'll be able to do things again like we ever did, you know, like not so much holidays, but I don't know whether she'll go to a mainstream school, you know, all of those things looking forward. I don't know how this is going to work out, really. And you would have thought I would have considered that. But I was so driven to bring her home for all the right reasons, because she is our daughter and she needed to come home. And I believe that with every bone in me. But what I would say is that I had no idea I think until you're in it, you don't know how hard it is. You just don't know how hard it is. The cost of it. And I get that, of course, this process has costs. You know, bearing any child has costs. I get that. I feel like we were made to pay an additional cost that was unreasonable, you know, through this, that should never have been incurred. So that will take time. But she is absolutely, she got me through lockdown, to be honest. And she continues to be an education for me, really.
I mean, you've been really, really honest, and you have a unique perspective as a social worker, you know, as you say, you don't share the sort of the same work, but you've got those generic principles and, you know, all of that learning. Has that presented with challenges sort of when you're working with other professionals, because you're a professional as well?
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to ask, has that enhanced my practice and made me a better social worker?
Well, no, not, not that.
You'd have to ask my service users that. They probably
well, yeah,
that's,
yeah.
She's still crap.
I was thinking more really in relation to
professionals. I think,
how
to
they
be honest,
respond to you.
Yeah, I've got more done. And that's so wrong. That's so wrong. But I can only, and I've only just started to realise it, joining other groups of other parents who have children with the same condition that my daughter has. And I think obviously there's a national disparity to how people are accessing support that's ridiculous. But we are pretty much on an even keel with her support now. I'm not saying that that hasn't taken work, but what I think is the most ridiculous thing about it all is I just speak their language, and that's got us things. And it shouldn't get us things, but it has. I think sometimes me and my friend are going to do a stand-up act at some point. Nobody would ever want to see it, but there would probably need to be quite a lot of drink involved. But what we were saying was, you know, when people have been on like those listening courses and the use of kind of reflective listening, but in a completely, like, there's one thing is the intention to listen to another human being is a really valid thing. That's a great motivation. But when you've been on a listening course and been taught to just say back to them what they just said to make them feel like they've been listened to, that's not the same thing as really wanting to listen to another human being.
Yeah.
So I do find that happens quite a lot on the phone, because we're having lots of phone kind of consultations. Normally we'd see people, wouldn't we? So I just think, oh, please, for the love of God, stop talking back to me what I just said. I know it. I said it. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the look in the eye when you know that they're just waiting for their turn to talk, really, that's all they're doing. They're just, yeah.
So.
I mean, Becky, you've been really, really honest. Is there anything you were hoping I was going to ask you, or anything that you'd like to say before we kind of draw it to a close?
I just think for me, it's really been a long journey to get here. And I think I'd really like going forward for adoption and for people working with adopters specifically, because that's all I can speak from my experience as an adopter, is to consider the whole family. I think it was as if the child is one thing and then this family is another thing. And it just felt like there was no consideration of what that would be as a whole and what we are as a whole and what we offer as a whole. And I think that kind of real compassion and empathy that we did get shown in the end just made all the difference, because then you relax and then you can be more yourself. And then they can see more of yourself. And that surely gives everyone a better experience of what they need to get in terms of the information gathering side of things, and what we need to get in terms of a bit more of a relaxed and enjoyable process as much as it can be. It can be. I believe it can be. And I think in terms of after adoption support, as I've said, I think we're very lucky. And I think we're very fortunate to be in a position. But what I would say is I never realised as a social worker how much power I had until somebody had it over me.
Yeah.
And I think that will forever change my perception of working with vulnerable people or people that have care and support needs.
That's been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, and I wish you all the best in the future. So thank you.
Thanks.